And so Einstein realized that the familiar geometrical spatial relationships codified by the Greeks, relationships that pertain to flat space figures like a circle on a flat table, do not hold from the perspective of an accelerated observer. Of course, we have discussed only one particular kind of accelerated motion, but Einstein showed that a similar result, the warping of space, holds in all instances of accelerated motion. In fact, accelerated motion not only results in a warping of space, it also results in an analogous warping of time. Historically, Einstein first focused on the warping of time and subsequently realized the importance of the warping of space. On one level, it should not be too surprising that time is also affected, since we have already seen in Chapter 2 that special relativity articulates a union between space and time. This merger was summarized by the poetic words of Minkowski, who, during a lecture on special relativity in 1908, said, "Henceforward, space on its own and time on its own will decline into mere shadows, and only a kind of union between the two will preserve its independence." In more down-to-earth but similarly imprecise language, by knitting space and time together into the unified structure of space-time, special relativity declares, what's true for space is true for time. But this raises a question. Whereas we can picture warped space by its having a curved shape, what do we really mean by warped time? To get a feel for the answer, let's once again impose upon Slim and Jim on the tornado ride and ask them to carry out the following experiment. Slim will stand with his back against the ride, at the far end of one of the ride's radial struts, while Jim will slowly crawl toward him along the strut, starting from the ride's center. Every few feet, Jim will stop his crawling, and the two brothers are to compare the readings on their watches. What will they find? From our stationary, bird's-eye perspective, we can again predict the answer. Their watches will not agree. We come to this conclusion because we realize that Slim and Jim are traveling at different speeds. On the tornado ride, the farther out along a radial strut you are, the farther you must travel to complete one rotation, and therefore the faster you must go. But from special relativity, the faster you go, the slower your watch ticks. And hence we realize that Slim's watch will tick more slowly than Jim's. Furthermore, Slim and Jim will find that, as Jim gets closer to Slim, the ticking rate of Jim's watch will slow down, approaching that of Slim's. This reflects the fact that as Jim gets farther out along the strut, his circular speed increases toward that of Slim. We conclude that to observers on the spinning ride, such as Slim and Jim, the rate of passage of time depends upon their precise position, in this case, their distance from the center of the ride. This is an illustration of what we mean by warped time. Time is warped if its rate of passage differs from one location to another. And, of particular importance to our present discussion, Jim will also notice something else as he crawls out along the strut. He will feel an increasingly strong outward pull, because not only does speed increase, but his acceleration increases as well the farther he is from the spinning ride's center. On the tornado ride, then, we see that greater acceleration is tied up with slower clocks. That is, greater acceleration results in a more significant warping of time. These observations took Einstein to the final leap. Since he had already shown gravity and accelerated motion to be effectively indistinguishable, and since he now had shown that accelerated motion is associated with the warping of space and time, he made the following proposal for the innards of the black box of gravity, the mechanism by which gravity operates. Gravity, according to Einstein, is the warping of space and time. Let's see what this means. The basics of general relativity. To get a feel for this new view of gravity, let's consider the prototypical situation of a planet, such as the Earth, revolving around a star, such as the Sun. In Newtonian gravity, the Sun keeps the Earth in orbit with an unidentified gravitational tether that somehow instantaneously reaches out across vast distances of space and grabs hold of the Earth, and similarly, the Earth reaches out and grabs hold of the Sun. Einstein provided a new conception of what actually happens. It will aid in our discussion of Einstein's approach to have a concrete visual model of space-time that we can conveniently manipulate. To do so, we will simplify things. For the moment, we will ignore time and focus solely on a visual model of space. We will reincorporate time in our discussion shortly. We will often refer to a two-dimensional analog of three-dimensional space. Most of the insight we gain from thinking in terms of this lower-dimensional model is directly applicable to the physical three-dimensional setting, so the simpler model provides a powerful pedagogical device. Imagine a two-dimensional model of a spatial region of our universe. A flat, grid-like structure is a convenient means of specifying positions, just as a street grid gives a means of specifying locations in a city. In a city, of course, one gives an address by specifying a location on the two-dimensional street grid, and also giving a location in the vertical direction, such as a floor number. It is the latter information, location in the third spatial dimension, that our two-dimensional analogy suppresses for visual clarity. In the absence of any matter or energy, Einstein envisioned that space would be flat. In our two-dimensional model, this means that the shape of space should be like the surface of a smooth table. This is the image of our spatial universe commonly held for thousands of years. But what happens to space if a massive object like the Sun is present? Before Einstein, the answer was nothing. Space and time were thought to provide an inert theater, merely setting the stage on which the events of the universe play themselves out. The chain of Einstein's reasoning that we have been following, however, leads to a different conclusion. A massive body like the Sun, and indeed any body, exerts a gravitational force on other objects. In the example of a terrorist bomb, we learned that gravitational forces are indistinguishable from accelerated motion. In the example of the tornado ride, we learned that a mathematical description of accelerated motion requires the relations of curved space. These links between gravity, accelerated motion, and curved space led Einstein to the remarkable suggestion that the presence of mass, such as the Sun, causes the fabric of space around it to warp. A useful and oft-quoted analogy is that much like a rubber membrane on which a bowling ball has been placed, the fabric of space becomes distorted due to the presence of a massive object like the Sun. According to this radical proposal, space is not merely a passive forum providing the arena for the events of the universe. Rather, the shape of space responds to objects in the environment. This warping, in turn, affects other objects moving in the vicinity of the Sun, as they now must traverse the distorted spatial fabric. Using the rubber membrane bowling ball analogy, if we place a small ball bearing on the membrane and set it off with some initial velocity, the path it will follow depends on whether or not the bowling ball is sitting in the center. If the bowling ball is absent, the rubber membrane will be flat and the ball bearing will travel along a straight line. If the bowling ball is present and thereby warps the membrane, the ball bearing will travel along a curved path. In fact, ignoring friction, if we set the ball bearing moving with just the right speed and just the right direction, it will continue to move in a recurring curved path around the bowling ball. In effect, it will go into orbit. Our language presages the application of this analogy to gravity. The Sun, like the bowling ball, warps the fabric of space surrounding it, and the Earth's motion, like that of the ball bearing, is determined by the shape of the warp. The Earth, like the ball bearing, will move in orbit around the Sun if its speed and orientation have suitable values. This effect on the motion of the Earth is what we normally would refer to as the gravitational influence of the Sun. The difference now is that, unlike Newton, Einstein has specified the mechanism by which gravity is transmitted, the warping of space. In Einstein's view, The gravitational tether holding the Earth in orbit is not some mysterious instantaneous action of the Sun. Rather, it is the warping of the spatial fabric caused by the Sun's presence. This allows us to understand the two essential features of gravity in a new way. First, the more massive the bowling ball, the greater the distortion it causes in the rubber membrane. Similarly, in Einstein's description of gravity, the more massive an object is, the greater the distortion it causes in the surrounding space. This implies that the more massive an object, the greater the gravitational influence it can exert on other bodies, precisely in accord with our experiences. Second, just as the distortion of the rubber membrane due to the bowling ball gets smaller as one gets farther from it, the amount of spatial warping due to a massive body, such as the Sun, decreases as one's distance from it increases. This, again, jibes with our understanding of gravity, whose influence becomes weaker as the distance between objects becomes larger. An important point to note is that the ball bearing itself warps the rubber membrane, although only slightly. Similarly, the Earth, being a massive body in its own right, also warps the fabric of space, although far less than the Sun. This is how, in the language of general relativity, the Earth keeps the Moon in orbit, and it is also how the Earth keeps each of us bound to its surface. As a skydiver plunges earthward, he or she is sliding down a depression in the spatial fabric caused by the Earth's mass. Moreover, each of us, like any massive object, also warps the spatial fabric in close proximity to our bodies, although the comparatively small mass of a human body makes this a minuscule indentation. In summary, then, Einstein fully agreed with Newton's statement that gravity must be caused by an agent, and rose to Newton's challenge in which the identity of the agent was left to the consideration of my readers. The agent of gravity, according to Einstein, is the fabric of the cosmos. A few caveats. The rubber membrane bowling ball analogy is valuable because it gives us a visual image with which we can grasp tangibly what we mean by a warp in the spatial fabric of the universe. Physicists often use this and similar analogies to guide their own intuition regarding gravitation and curvature. However, its usefulness notwithstanding, the rubber membrane bowling ball analogy is not perfect, and for clarity, we call attention to a few of its shortcomings. First, when the Sun causes the fabric of space around it to warp, this is not due to its being pulled downward by gravity, as in the case of the bowling ball, which warps the rubber membrane because it is pulled earthward by gravity. In the case of the Sun, there is no other object to do the pulling. Instead, Einstein has taught us that the warping of space is gravity. The mere presence of an object with mass causes space to respond by warping. Similarly, the Earth is not kept in orbit because the gravitational pull of some other external object guides it along the valleys in the warped spatial environment, as occurs for a ball bearing on the warped rubber membrane. Instead, Einstein showed that objects move through space, space-time more precisely, along the shortest possible paths, the easiest possible paths, or the paths of least resistance. If the space is warped, such paths will be curved, and so, although the rubber membrane bowling ball model provides a good visual analogy of how an object such as the Sun warps the space around it and thereby influences the motion of other bodies, the physical mechanism by which these distortions occur is totally different. The former appeals to our intuition about gravity in the traditional Newtonian framework, whereas the latter expresses a reformulation of gravity in terms of curved space. A second shortcoming of the analogy stems from the rubber membranes being two-dimensional. In reality, although harder to visualize, the Sun and all other massive objects actually warps the three-dimensional space surrounding it. All of the space surrounding the Sun, below, on the sides, on top, suffers the same kind of distortion. A body, like the Earth, travels through the three-dimensional warped spatial environment caused by the sun's presence. You may find this troubling. Why doesn't the Earth slam into the vertical part of curved space? Bear in mind, though, that space, unlike the rubber membrane, is not a solid barrier. Instead, the warped grids are but a couple of thin slices through the full three-dimensional warped space in which you, the Earth, and everything else are immersed fully and move freely. Perhaps you find that this only makes the problem seem worse. Why don't we feel space if we are immersed within its fabric? But we do. We feel gravity, and space is the medium by which the gravitational force is communicated. As the eminent physicist John Wheeler has often said in describing gravity, mass grips space by telling it how to curve. Space grips mass by telling it how to move. A third, related shortcoming of the analogy is that we have suppressed the time dimension. We have done this for visual clarity because, notwithstanding the declaration of special relativity that we should think of the time dimension on par with the three familiar spatial dimensions, it is significantly harder to see time. But as illustrated by the example of the tornado ride, acceleration, and hence gravity, warps both space and time. In fact, the mathematics of general relativity shows that in the case of a relatively slow-moving body like the Earth revolving around a typical star like the Sun, the warping of time actually has a far more significant impact on the Earth's motion than does the warping of space. We will return to a discussion of the warping of time after the next section. Important as these three caveats are, so long as you hold them in the back of your mind, it is perfectly acceptable to invoke the warped space image provided by the bowling ball on the rubber membrane as an intuitive summary of Einstein's new view of gravity. Conflict resolution. By introducing space and time as dynamic players, Einstein provided a clear conceptual image of how gravity works. The central question, though, is whether this reformulation of the gravitational force resolves the conflict with special relativity that afflicts Newton's theory of gravity. It does. Again, the rubber membrane analogy gives the essential idea. Imagine that we have a ball bearing rolling in a straight line across the flat membrane in the absence of the bowling ball. As we place the bowling ball on the membrane, the motion of the ball bearing will be affected, but not instantaneously. If we were to film this sequence of events and view it in slow motion, we would see that the disturbance caused by the introduction of the bowling ball spreads like ripples in a pond and eventually reaches the position of the ball bearing. After a short time, transitory oscillations along the rubber surface would settle down, leaving us with a static, warped membrane. The same is true for the fabric of space. When no mass is present, space is flat, and a small object will blissfully be at rest or will travel at a constant velocity. If a large mass comes on the scene, space will warp, but as in the case of the membrane, the distortion will not be instantaneous. Rather, it will spread outward from the massive body, ultimately settling down into a warped shape that communicates the gravitational pull of the new body. In our analogy, disturbances to the rubber membrane travel along its extent at a speed dictated by its particular material composition. In the real setting of general relativity, Einstein was able to calculate how fast disturbances to the fabric of the universe travel, and he found that they travel at precisely the speed of light. This means, for instance, that in the hypothetical example discussed earlier, in which the demise of the Sun affects the Earth by virtue of changes in their mutual gravitational attraction, the influence will not be instantaneously communicated. Rather, as an object changes its position or even blows apart, it causes a change in the distortion of the space-time fabric that spreads outward at light speed, precisely in keeping with the cosmic speed limit of special relativity. Thus, we on Earth would visually learn of the Sun's destruction at the same moment that we would feel the gravitational consequences, about 8 minutes after it explodes. Einstein's formulation thereby resolves the conflict Gravitational disturbances keep pace with, but do not outrun, photons. The warping of time, revisited. Warped space is a distortion of the shape of space. Physicists have invented analogous images to try to convey the meaning of warped time, but they are significantly more difficult to decipher, so we will not introduce them here. Instead, let's follow up the example of Slim and Jim on the tornado ride and try to get a sense of the experience of gravitationally induced warped time. To do so, we revisit George and Gracie, no longer in the deep darkness of empty space, but floating near the outskirts of the solar system. They are still each wearing large digital clocks on their spacesuits that are initially synchronized. To keep things simple, we ignore the effects of the planets and consider only the gravitational field of the Sun. Let's further imagine that a spaceship hovering near George and Gracie has reeled out a long cable extending all the way down to the vicinity of the Sun's surface. George uses this cable to slowly lower himself toward the Sun. As he does so, he periodically stops so that he and Gracie can compare the rate at which time is elapsing on their clocks. The warping of time, predicted by Einstein's general relativity, implies that George's clock will run slower and slower, compared with Gracie's, as the gravitational field he experiences gets stronger and stronger. That is, the closer he gets to the Sun, the slower his clock will run. It is in this sense that gravity distorts time as well as space. You should note that unlike the case in Chapter 2, in which George and Gracie were in empty space moving relative to each other with constant velocity, in the present setting there is no symmetry between them. George, unlike Gracie, feels the force of gravity getting stronger and stronger. He has to hold the cable tighter and tighter as he gets closer to the Sun to avoid being pulled in. Each of them agrees that George's clock is running slow. There is no equally valid perspective that exchanges their roles and reverses this conclusion. This is, in fact, what we found in Chapter 2 when George experienced an acceleration by turning on his jetpack to catch up with Gracie. The acceleration George felt resulted in his clock definitively running slow relative to Gracie's. Since we now know that feeling accelerated motion is the same as feeling a gravitational force, the present situation of George on the cable involves the same principle, and once again we see that George's clock, and everything else in his life, runs in slow motion compared with Gracie's. In a gravitational field such as that at the surface of an ordinary star like the Sun, the slowing of clocks is quite small. If Gracie stays put at a billion miles from the Sun, then when George has climbed to within a few miles of its surface, the rate of ticking of his clock will be about 99.9998% of Gracie's. Slower, but not by much. If, however, George lowered himself on a cable so that he hovered just above the surface of a neutron star whose mass, roughly equal to that of the Sun, is crushed to a density of some million billion times that of a solar density, the larger gravitational field would cause his clock to tick at about 76% of the rate of Gracie's. Stronger gravitational fields, such as those just outside a black hole, cause the flow of time to slow even further. Stronger gravitational fields cause a more severe warping of time. Experimental verification of general relativity. Most people who study general relativity are captivated by its aesthetic elegance. By replacing the cold, mechanistic Newtonian view of space, time, and gravity with a dynamic and geometric description involving curved space-time, Einstein wove gravity into the basic fabric of the universe. Rather than being imposed as an additional structure, gravity becomes part and parcel of the universe at its most fundamental level, breathing life into space and time by allowing them to curve, warp, and ripple, results in what we commonly refer to as gravity. Aesthetics aside, the ultimate test of a physical theory is its ability to explain and predict physical phenomena accurately. Since its inception in the late 1600s until the beginning of the 20th century, Newton's theory of gravity passed this test with flying colors. Whether applied to balls thrown up in the air, objects dropped from leaning towers, comets whirling around the sun, or planets going about their solar orbits, Newton's theory provides extremely accurate explanations of all observations, as well as predictions that have been verified innumerable times in a wealth of situations. The motivation for questioning this experimentally successful theory, as we have emphasized, was its property of instantaneous transmission of the gravitational force, in conflict with special relativity. The effects of special relativity, although central to a fundamental understanding of space, time, and motion, are extremely small in the slow-velocity world we typically inhabit. Similarly, the deviations between Einstein's general relativity, a theory of gravity compatible with special relativity, and Newton's theory of gravity are also extremely small in most common situations. This is both good and bad. It is good because any theory purporting to supplant Newton's theory of gravity had better closely agree with it when applied to those arenas in which Newton's theory has been experimentally verified. It is bad because it makes it difficult to adjudicate between the two theories experimentally. Distinguishing between Newton's and Einstein's theories requires extremely precise measurements applied to experiments that are very sensitive to the ways in which the two theories differ. If you throw a baseball, Newtonian and Einsteinian gravity can be used to predict where it will land, and the answers will be different, but the differences will be so slight that they are generally beyond our capacity to detect experimentally. A more clever experiment is called for, and Einstein suggested one. We see stars at night, but of course they are also there during the day. We usually don't see them because their distant pinpoint light is overwhelmed by the light emitted by the sun. During a solar eclipse, however, the moon temporarily blocks the light of the sun and distant stars become visible. Nevertheless, the presence of the sun still has an effect. Light from some of the distant stars must pass close to the sun on the way to Earth. Einstein's general relativity predicts that the sun will cause the surrounding space and time to warp, and such distortion will influence the path taken by the starlight. After all, the photons of distant origin travel along the fabric of the universe. If the fabric is warped, the motion of the photons will be affected much as for a material body. The bending of the path of light is greatest for those light signals that just graze the sun on their way to Earth. A solar eclipse makes it possible to see such sun-grazing starlight without its being completely obscured by sunlight itself. The angle through which the light path is bent can be measured in a simple way. The bending of the starlight's path results in a shift in the apparent position of the star. The shift can be accurately measured by comparing this apparent position with the star's actual location, known from observations of the star at night, in the absence of the sun's warping influence, carried out when the Earth is at an appropriate position, some 6 months earlier or later. In November of 1915, Einstein used his new understanding of gravity to calculate the angle through which starlight signals that just grazed the sun would be bent, and found the answer to be about 0.00049 of a degree, 1.75 arc seconds, where an arc second is 1/3600th of a degree. This tiny angle is equal to that subtended by a quarter placed upright and viewed from nearly 2 miles away. The detection of such a small angle was, however, within reach of the technology of the day. At the urging of Sir Frank Dyson, director of the Greenwich Observatory, Sir Arthur Eddington, a well-known astronomer and secretary of the Royal Astronomical Society in England, organized an expedition to the island of Principe off the coast of West Africa to test Einstein's prediction during the solar eclipse of May 29, 1919. On November 6, 1919, after some 5 months of analysis of the photographs taken during the eclipse at Principe and of other photographs of the eclipse taken by a second British team led by Charles Davidson and Andrew Crommelin in Sobral, Brazil, It was announced at a joint meeting of the Royal Society and the Royal Astronomical Society that Einstein's prediction, based on general relativity, had been confirmed. It took little time for word of this success, a complete overturning of previous conceptions of space and time, to spread well beyond the confines of the physics community, making Einstein a celebrated figure worldwide. On November 7, 1919, the headline in the London Times read, "Revolution in Science, New Theory of the Universe, Newtonian Ideas Overthrown." This was Einstein's moment of glory. In the years following this experiment, Eddington's confirmation of general relativity came under some critical scrutiny. Numerous difficult and subtle aspects of the measurement made it hard to reproduce and raised some questions regarding the trustworthiness of the original experiment. Nevertheless, in the last 40 years, a variety of experiments making use of technological advancements have tested numerous aspects of general relativity with great precision. The predictions of general relativity have been uniformly confirmed. There is no longer any doubt that Einstein's description of gravity is not only compatible with special relativity, but yields predictions closer to experimental results than those of Newton's theory. Black holes, the Big Bang, and the expansion of space. Whereas special relativity is most manifest when things are moving fast, general relativity comes into its own when things are very massive and the warps in space and time are correspondingly severe. Let's describe two examples. The first is a discovery made by the German astronomer Karl Schwarzschild while studying Einstein's revelations on gravity in between his own calculations of artillery trajectories at the Russian front during World War I in 1916. Remarkably, just months after Einstein had put the finishing touches on general relativity, Schwarzschild was able to use the theory to gain a complete and exact understanding of the way space and time warp in the vicinity of a perfectly spherical star. Schwarzschild sent his results from the Russian front to Einstein, who presented them on Schwarzschild's behalf to the Prussian Academy. Beyond confirming and making mathematically precise the warping, Schwarzschild's work, which has now come to be known as Schwarzschild's solution, revealed a stunning implication of general relativity. He showed that if the mass of a star is concentrated in a small enough spherical region so that its mass divided by its radius exceeds a particular critical value, the resulting space-time warp is so radical that anything, including light, that gets too close to the star will be unable to escape its gravitational grip. Since not even light can escape such compressed stars, they were initially called dark or frozen stars. A more catchy name was coined years later by John Wheeler, who called them black holes. Black because they cannot emit light, holes because anything getting too close falls into them, never to return. The name stuck. A black hole warps the surrounding space-time fabric so severely that anything that comes within its event horizon can't escape from its gravitational grip. No one knows exactly what happens at the deepest interior point of a black hole. Although black holes have a reputation for rapacity, objects that pass by them at a safe distance are deflected in much the same way that they would be by an ordinary star, and can proceed along their merry way. But objects of any composition whatsoever that get too close, closer than what has been termed the black hole's event horizon, are doomed. They will be drawn inexorably toward the center of the black hole and subject to an ever-increasing and ultimately destructive gravitational strain. For example, if you dropped feet first through the event horizon, as you approached the black hole's center, you would find yourself getting increasingly uncomfortable. The gravitational force of the black hole would increase so dramatically that its pull on your feet would be much stronger than its pull on your head, since in a feet-first fall, your feet are always a bit closer than your head to the black hole's center. So much stronger, in fact, that you would be stretched with a force that would quickly tear your body to shreds. If, on the contrary, you were more prudent in your wanderings near a black hole and took great care not to trespass beyond the event horizon, you could make use of the black hole for a rather amazing feat. Imagine, for example, that you were to discover a black hole whose mass was about 1,000 times the mass of the sun, and that you were to lower yourself on a cable, much as George did near the sun, to about an inch above the black hole's event horizon. As we have discussed, gravitational fields cause a warping of time, and this means that your passage through time would slow down.